Please be seated. Have you ever felt sorry for yourself? Ever felt there was nothing to be done? And the best thing will be to cry, scream, or go to bed and pull the duvet up over your head. At times like these, it's different to see a different perspective, and much more difficult for someone else to try and show you a different perspective. We may be in such a state as we're feeling sorry or because we're fearful. And both of these things are going on in our readings today. And in both readings, God finds a way to move things forward. Next one, please, Joe. Elijah is another thoroughly unpleasant person in the Old Testament. I seem to keep picking them. He was a zealot, a prophet called, it must be said, to minister at a very difficult time. Israel had turned away from the proper observance of the faith, and the king, Ahab, had married a pagan wife, Jezebel, who was seeking to increase the practice of paganism. The Bible calls this Baal worship. She persecuted those who stayed loyal to God. Elijah must have wished he'd been called for a different age. But he set about his work with gusto. And the passage we've heard read this morning comes just after a dramatic showdown with the pagan priests, where he challenges them to call down fire from heaven, and they fail. Elijah demonstrates God's power and then butchers them. This didn't go down well with Jezebel, and Elijah has to flee to the mountains to escape her rage. And there he has his pity party. He's depressed. The first thing God does in the passage preceding today's is to give him food and make him sleep. Suitably refreshed, God asks Elijah about his situation, and the pity party starts. "I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts," says Elijah, "but the Israelites have forgotten your covenant, thrown down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they're seeking my life to take it away." So I presume when we read that, we all think Elijah has some cause to feel sorry for himself. After all, if he was the only faithful Jew left, the only functioning prophet, and if they were coming to get him, then we should feel sorry for him, shouldn't we? The problem is that Elijah isn't telling the whole of the truth. Yes, Jezebel was after him, but he'd just killed 200 of her priests. They had families too. Later in the passage, God tells him to anoint someone as king over Israel. So there's a coup going on, and God is clearly on the side of the better king. So they can't all have forsaken God. He's told to anoint Elisha as prophet in his place, so he can't be the only prophet left. And then, strikingly, at the very end of today's passage, "Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." So there's a replacement king, a replacement prophet, and 7,000 who haven't given in to pagan worship. Doesn't sound like Elijah's perception was very accurate. But that's what happens when we throw a pity party. We have a distorted view of the world and of our own situation, and we make it so much worse than it actually is. And we see something similar in the gospel reading. The disciples were exhausted. They'd had a long day listening to Jesus preach, dealing with the hungry crowds. This episode follows on from last week's reading of the feeding of the 5,000, where Jesus fed 5,000 men, and to quote the writer, to say nothing of the women and the children. They'd finally managed to get the crowds to go home. Jesus wanted some me time in the mountains, and the disciples put out into the lake. At last, they could have some downtime. But a storm came and scared the living daylights out of them. Admittedly, some were fishers, so they knew how to handle a boat, but they were clearly afraid. And then Jesus walking on the water to them hardly calmed them down. Their perceptions were off kilter. They thought a ghost was coming towards them. Once they realized it was Jesus, however, they were reassured, even to the point where Peter impulsively leaps into the water and walks towards Jesus. But as soon as he took his eyes off Jesus, he noticed the things around him, the wind, the rain, the storm, and so sank beneath the waves. Not a bad metaphor for our own lives, really. It seems to me that the link between these passages is that they both offer lessons on working out what's really going on. Elijah plays the martyr, but his self-righteousness makes him forget or ignore 7,000 faithful people. Elisha, the trainee prophet, and a suitable king, suitable candidate to be king, are in the background too, but he ignores them. Peter overcomes his fear and so reaches out and walks on the water, but easily becomes distracted by the turmoil and so loses his confidence and sinks beneath the waves. In our church life, it's easy to get distracted and to have a pity party. One of my placements last year took me to this church building on the screen. It is the size of a medium cathedral. It's a URC building. The spire is so tall that it's a landmark out to sea. The town I was working is on the coast. It's a Grade 1 listed building, words which in England make ministerial hearts sink. It's the same as a Grade A listing here. No one wants to have a Grade A listed church building because there's not a lot you can do to it within the law. The next picture, please. The church seats 950 people. It has a gallery around three sides. One of the older members was in his 90s, and he said when he went there as a kid, the rich came and sat in the gallery, and their servants sat behind them in the tiered seating. He joked that the rot set in when people stopped bringing their servants to church. Others say that the church then was full and wonderful, and the Sunday school had hundreds of children. There are pictures of the elder, it was a Presbyterian church when it was built, and there are pictures of the Kirk session of many, many men with many, many beards. And by the 70s, some ladies started to appear, without beards, but with hats and white gloves. And in the vestry, the pictures of the elders of the Kirk session going back years is there. And they bemoaned the fact because it's not like that now. They get 25 people on a good Sunday. And 25 people in that space is really quite disheartening. I felt sorry for them. What they forgot, however, in their pity party was that when the church was full, it was full for some reasons which had very little to do with the gospel. The church was built for the Protestant shipyard owners in that town. And their foreman would come with them to church, and all the men who wished to work on Monday had to make sure they were seen on Sunday by the shipyard owner or the foreman, or you didn't eat that week. Similar things were happening in the large Roman Catholic church down the road for the Catholic shipyard owners. I suppose it was a Victorian version of people in England going to Church of England's churches to get their children into Church of England's schools. Looking back from a time of famine, as far as church attendance goes, was quite discouraging, and that congregation had lost their nerve and found themselves sinking beneath the waves. Instead of being thankful for the 25 people that went, they bemoaned the 925 that didn't. Of course, as they looked back, they had a distorted view of reality, just like our friend Elijah. We have a choice in our church. We can look back at the past and be amazed at the numbers that used to come, the history, the money that used to be here, the brimming Sunday school, the proud history, and bemoan the state of things now and despair, lose sight of Jesus and sink. Or we can do something different. We could look at the past and see what we can learn from it to propel us forward. We could see that in the past, our forebears in this place saw Jesus, stepped out of their boats, took risks, walked towards him, and trusted him to help them do well. As they trusted Jesus, they drew people to themselves. We can worry, huddle, and sink, being more and more resentful, or we can be outward focused and look to Jesus, to see where Jesus is now on the streets around us, and how we might meet him and serve him there in his people. If we keep our eyes and the eyes of our church on Jesus, and if we continue to respond to him, our future is secure, and future generations will look back on us seeking to learn our response to our age as they seek to craft their response to their own age. Like Elijah, we have to learn to see things as they really are, resist having a pity party, and like Peter, keep our eyes focused on Jesus so we don't sink beneath the waves. Will you pray with me? Sweet Lord of rest, ark from the ocean's roar, within thy shelter blessed, soon may we reach the shore. Save us, for still the tempest raves. Save us, lest we sink beneath the waves. Sweet Lord of rest, help us keep our eyes on you, that we may be faithful and true. Amen.